Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, hello. How are you doing, Dr. Lorraine Goodwin? This is Carpe Diem, Dr. Lorraine Goodwin. So happy that you're listening to my little blog cast. And we're going to talk remembering Muhammad Ali. He passed away this evening. Slightly, I don't know exactly what time he died, but it was, I guess, on June 3rd. And went to the hospital, had some respiratory problems, had been living in Arizona, I guess, for these respiratory problems. And was having some difficulty, went to the hospital, and then he died. Very sad. Lots of memories. And he was very important in how America changed back in, you know, the 60s and so forth. He was an important element, and he was the reason a lot of changes happened. Well, my father was a sincere boxing fan, as were most men around that time that I knew, most dads and, you know, men of that age. So when Sonny Liston came on, my father would be glued to the set, and he would be in on the fight, and he would be coach him, you know, like a real fan would do on a side ring. And as a kid, I never understood it. Why are these people in there beating each other? It just was very gory. And back in those days, I mean, people used to get very bloody. It was people get knocked out all the time. It was very, not something I wanted to see, but it was certainly something America loved. Sonny Liston, was Muhammad Ali beat Sonny Liston, and that's how he first garnered the love of so many black people and people in general. And then, of course, he was a totally different sort of person. You know, Sonny Liston wasn't really that handsome. He had some habit of, you know, keeping his weight down. He would chew his meat. He would chew his food, and then he would spit it out in the container. And so he always had to eat alone. And so these were negative things that, you know, people would, you know, you would think as a kid, as I was, you know, this doesn't sound right. This doesn't sound like the person I'd want to, you know, sit at the dinner table with or whatever. And Sonny Liston said he didn't sit at the dinner table with people. He always ate alone when he did this stuff. But when Cassius Clay, as he was called back in those days, came on the scene, he was totally different, extremely good-looking, great smile, very good with words. Sonny Liston wasn't great with words. Cassius Clay was fabulous with words and rhyming and answering and energetic, and he was all the things a young man, a young fighter should be, and he just really pulled you in. You wanted to listen to him, and then when he fought, you know, he transferred that interest into his fight. And so even people like me, who really weren't interested in fighting, I became interested in watching Cassius Clay fight. Well, he was too loved, and people weren't used to a black fighter who had all this love, this good looking, with a great build, could speak, had his own mind. So a lot when the was that the Vietnam War, and they called him up, and then he said he wasn't going to go, and he changed his name to Muhammad Ali, said his religion didn't condone killing in wars, and adopted the Muslim faith, and was really taken great care of by the Muslims his whole life. And you'll never see somebody who was surrounded by more love than Muhammad Ali. When he was taken care of by the Muslims, they really took care of him as a person. The United States did not do that. What the United States really wanted to do, well, with Elvis Presley, they did the same thing. They drafted him in, but then they made him a little cutie in the military outfit. He could sing and he could do all kinds of things. But he was still a soldier. He was still under the control of military people. I don't know what kind of problems, if any, Elvis Presley had, but the reason they wanted to get Cassius Clay into the military is I believe they wanted to kill him. They knew he was winning in the ring, but they wanted to take this man, you know, give him a couple of war wounds, make him weak, make him disabled, or just kill him in the military, and that would end him. And they could bring him down and get him away from all of the love he had garnered throughout the United States and the world. Well, when he became a conscientious objector, of course, he wouldn't go. And then they had to figure out what to do with this guy. And people were rooting for him. You know, they weren't going to be able to boss him. Well, they could boss him around because, I mean, people were basically powerless, regardless of what people thought they could do. But he ended up, you know, not going to war. He didn't have those Elvis Presley pictures in the military, and he was not able to, he did not need to become subservient to military people, many of whom would hate him for nothing else other than just his race and try to, you know, humiliate him or put him in dangerous situations or even handicap, like they do with prisoners, they handicap them, and then they beat them up, you know, maybe tie their arms or do something, or humiliate them, put them in situations and then feed something to the press to humiliate the person so that their stature is diminished. He didn't get that treatment, and but he was not able to fight. So it was one of the things they did because he didn't go into the military, that they kept him from fighting. So he wasn't able to get as many wins as he would have if they hadn't done that. And they were able to keep him out of the ring, and they were able to keep his record lower than it would have been if he had been able to go and fight during those years. Many people took up what Muhammad Ali, Cassius Clay did and became conscientious objectors. You know, it's very hard to become a conscientious objector because without that military record and the way the military can get to guys and keep them from getting jobs or make them, you know, say negative things about them, it can be very hard once you've taken that route. But it was totally inappropriate going in the crazy Vietnam War that those people were, you know, certainly a valid way to not get involved in something they didn't believe in. People did not hold it against Muhammad Ali. Of course, he did it for religious reasons. And in those days, you know, people were not talking about any Muslims. There was no Malcolm X to talk about. Well, maybe Malcolm X was around about then. But they weren't really big in most normal families about discussion as they were later. So he was in the forefront of all that, too. And he helped introduce a lot of people to the Muslim movement. And he also introduced a lot of people to Muslim beliefs and showed by their actions just how nice and protecting the Muslims were to a person like Muhammad Ali, who really could have been set up and killed, you know, in any alley, in any car, all kinds of places, because the things they did in boxing were just horrendous, and most people don't even discuss it. you know, they would fix fights. They would kill family members if you won the fight or you didn't throw the fight. Of course, there was a lot of illegal betting. It was a very sleazy business. And then, of course, he introduced us to Don King, who the fight promoter. And although Don King was doing his own tricks with the money and so forth and the representation, he still was better than any representation than that Muhammad Ali would have gotten through the white promoters. So Don King was certainly a figure that became well known to everybody because of Muhammad Ali and the good and bad of it all. But Muhammad Ali did end up with a very lucrative career. And, of course, everyone around the world wanted to meet him. Everyone in the world revered him for how he fought back on the system and didn't go in fighting in the Vietnam War and stood up for what he believed. I don't know if Don King is still alive. I haven't seen him since the Muhammad Ali days, but I know he did well with promoting. He was the guy with the really wild mixed gray and black hair that stood all over his head, and that was done on purpose because that was his statement that, yes, I am a black promoter. And so he was relishing the fact that he was black, and he didn't adopt any of the white hairstyles. So that's the reason Don King had that wild hair look that everybody knows him from. Well, of course, George Foreman was one of the big fights and one of the people that caused Muhammad Ali to have such a great brain injury, because they were two, it was like having two redwood trees fighting each other, just fiercely punching and so forth. And in the end, Muhammad Ali ended up with chronic traumatic encephalopathy from repeated strong brain injury from pounding of his head, falling. And as he got older, he would just stand his ground. He would do the rope-a-dope. That means he would hang on to the rope and take the punches, but stand up so that they couldn't count him out. Well, of course, that was one of his maneuvers that helped give him this chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And that's what he became known for in the end, you know, too. Those were his strategies for sticking it out in the ring against these really younger, strong fighters. He was one of the first people that black in America looked up to as far as being a full representation. Sonny Liston was great, and a lot of the others before that were great in different ways. But Cassius Clay came out, he looked like a normal person. He looked like somebody you'd know. He talked in a way that just brought you in, and he was very smart. His English language was educated. A lot of times the fighters that we saw in the past had much of an education, and they really had a lot of problems with the formalities of the English language. So this was a person who spoke well, looked great, fabulous in the ring, great body, very personable, and strong mind in that he was making his own decisions and he was willing to stand up even to the federal government. I mean, back then, no one was doing that. But he did. He did that. He was America's voice about the problems with the Vietnam War, and everybody was grateful for what he did, except for those people who were invested in having a war. You know, there are always people who want war because they make money off of it. But for those Americans who really didn't see the benefits of going to war, getting maimed and all sorts of things, especially for minorities, because when you came back, you got treated like dirt. There was nothing for you. The VAs were horrible. The medical care at the VA was horrible. Most of the people got addicted on drugs because that's what the doctors gave the soldiers for their chronic pains and their numerous other injuries. If they came back with a mental problem, they would give them strong psychotropic medications, which were also addictive and would change their mental thinking, their mental clarity. So the soldiers were getting messed up no matter what they complained of or who they went to, and the VA was just pushing all these drugs on people. Then they also had the shock therapy, they had the lobotomy, they had all sorts of things that they did to our poor veterans. And his stance will live on forever as to what to do when you have a conviction and people are telling you to go against that conviction. And even at the risk of jail, he was willing to stand up for his beliefs. And at that time, although people talk against Muslims, they were the ones that came in and helped him and helped give him protection against all of the fear-mongers who were trying to say because he changed his name to Muhammad Ali that he was now some sort of anti-American and some sort of danger to the country and so forth. A lot of the hype you hear today. And so because he wanted to stand up for his conviction, they took away his boxing license. They didn't allow him to fight. He was, if you're a fighter, you have to fight because that's how you keep your strength up. You keep your body toned. If you just sit around and you're not doing real fights and so forth, well, you get weaker in your field. You're not getting the practice you need. And I think we all remember, too, the Rumble in the Jungle, the big fight with Foreman. That's when they were trying to boost the amount of money the fighters would get, and they were also making it more of a spectacle. And Muhammad Ali was getting older, and it did turn out to be a spectacle. People liked that, the Rumble in the Jungle. And they were marketed as if they were, you know, two African tribesmen or two gangs or if they were two big apes. And that's as mentioned because of the death of Harambe a couple of days ago, the great ape that was killed in the Cincinnati Zoo when a mother allowed her child to get into the low-lying gorilla exhibit. But anyway, people were interested. Africa was a much more distant place. People had a lot of stereotypes about it, and so the fact that they were going to fight in Africa was brought up a lot of fantasy in a lot of people, and it was really a much-watched and a much-desired boxing exhibit. So So here's one statistic, says that Muhammad Ali fought 61 times as a professional, lost 5 times, and won 37 bouts by a knockout. Yeah, when he was young, he was really knocking him out fast. Those fights were so fast that he didn't get injured. But as he got older, then he became more of a punching bag and just stood his ground, planted his feet, and just did it. And also, you know, how did he do that? Oh, fly like a butterfly, sting like a bee. That was also one of his techniques for avoiding the, for being able to stay in the ring, and that he would, do this dancing around the ring to avoid the hits and then come in and give a big hit. So that was the sting like a bee, and that was one of the things that prolonged his career, and he continued as a fabulous public figure. He was diagnosed with Parkinson's, and of course we know now it may not have all been Parkinson's, but now we call it chronic traumatic encephalopathy, and of course you never recover that. That's damage to the brain. The brain swells, the brain's inside the head, and part of the brain dies because it doesn't have room. Normally, if you have a huge traumatic brain injury and you have brain swelling, what they do is they take off your skull, part of it, and allow your brain to swell up so that it can expand without the pressure of being inside the skull. And then after your brain goes down with steroids and other treatments, then they can replace your skull. But you can't do that to a fighter, because once you take the skull off, it's going to be held on with some mechanical devices, and that would have ended his career. So he had the brain swelling. It would swell up. Some of his brain would die. He would get scar tissue in the brain. The hormones and so forth would go awry. And that's what you're left with. And he is now one of the best figures that people can point to and say, this is what happens if you're going to do fighting, if you're going to do football, if you're going to do soccer and other things where they have a lot of head trauma. These are the types. This is the way you can end up if you do it too much, too long, you don't have protective gear, and you know, it just depends on how your body reacts to a hit. Can't predict that. Everybody's different. Well, even as a person with Parkinson's or his numerous neurologic problems, he still went out. You would still see him in restaurants. You would still see him at various events. He opened up the Olympics one year. It was very a tearjerker. Let me see, that was in 2012 in London, where he's much loved. And he lit the Olympic cauldron in the 1996 Games in Atlanta, and carried the Olympic flag at the opening ceremony for the 2012 Games in London. So he continued on. He always had a beautiful wife next to him who cared for him. As I said, he had many people who protected him and made sure he had whatever he needed, that he was not being abused, that he had a great quality of life, to with the limitations of his physical impairment. So what can we say? a legend has died, and it's a great time to remember him, to talk about his great qualities to your children, and go over what made him great, why do people love him so. He stood up for what he believed in, even though people threatened to do all kinds of things to him, put him in jail where they figured he would be beaten up and have all kinds of things done to him as a prisoner. They threatened and did take away his license so he couldn't box. They humiliated him in public. They just did everything. But he found a support group. And that's what you do in life. You know, you may find that your path is different than others, but you find people who are like-minded, who support what you're doing, who support you, as a person. Because there are a lot of people out there who are out to get you, who are out to humiliate you, trying to bring you down, and trying to make themselves look better by making you look worse. And he was a good person as far as he was always smiling. He, in spite of whatever problems he was having, he was always cheerful, pleasant work. And, you know, he had a lot of girlfriends. Women loved Muhammad Ali. He was never at a loss for women surrounding him. And he had girlfriends while he had wives. And but that's okay because, you know, we know that today that's one of the things that fame does to people. We see it all the time. But back in those days, people didn't think about it as much. At least I didn't. I was, but with him, you saw it, and so you got to see some of the pluses and minuses of being extraordinarily famous and how that impacts your life. And so he spent a lot of his money on people who were around him, who he loved, and who loved him, but who were very wasteful of his money. And he lost a lot of money just through his bad relationships with people. And he chose to allow that to go on because he liked some of the people. And he was the type of guy who would stick with you. You know, if you had made a bond, he wasn't going to desert you. But he did need better monitoring of his financial situation. So I'll say a prayer tonight for Muhammad Ali and think about his life and how my life could be better by remembering some of the things that he taught me by the way he lived his life and by making sure I'm surrounding myself with good people who are in good mental state, who do not wish me harm and that I don't wish harm so that I can live in positivity and do the best that I can with the things that I'm good at and that I know I'm good at. I also want to say about this Harambee thing. The zoo keeps saying there's nothing wrong with the zoo exhibit. And those guys need to be fired because that's crazy. Once the kid gets into the lowland gorilla exhibit, there is something wrong with the exhibit, and you have to admit it. You can't fix the problem if you don't admit what is wrong with the zoo. And the mother keeps saying she watched her kid well. Well, the fact that he got into the lowland gorilla exhibit means she did not watch the kid well. And she has to admit her fault, too, and she can't just say, oh, well, it's an accident, and thank God you saved him. It takes much more responsibility to be a parent, and it takes much more responsibility to be in charge of all of those dangerous animals and protect the public and protect the animal. Take care. My episode's over for tonight, and I'm sorry you've gotten such bad news about the death of Muhammad Ali. Take care, and I will talk to you later. Bye-bye.